Good evening, everyone. You're in the right place at the right time. This is Coast to Coast AM, blasting out of the Mojave Desert like a Scirocco, blazing across the land, into your town, into your home, slamming into your radio like a supercharged nanoparticle of unobtainium. Greetings to all of you from the boldest, bawdiest, most outrageous city in the world, the planetary capital of sun, fun, sin, sex, and secrets, my not-so-humble hometown, Las Vegas, Nevada. My name is George Knapp, your occasional host, designated driver of the airwaves, and moderator of tonight's upcoming cacophony of conversation. Happy that you decided to spend some time with us on this Father's Day. Dads, you've already opened a few gifts, maybe a new tie, maybe went out to eat with the family. Now you got some time of your own to kick back with us, and you might as well invite mom and the kids to join you. We got some good stuff for you tonight on Coast. As you know, we're always looking for new ways to look at ongoing mysteries, and we think tonight's guest will do just that. Coming up in a couple of minutes, a fresh voice for Coast fans. His name is Richard Thomas. He's a nonfiction writer who tackles regular news topics, but also paranormal matters, aliens, UFOs, ghosts, for numerous publications in the UK. And he caught my eye because I saw an article he wrote with the audacious title, "Have You Ever Wondered How Ghosts Work?" It's a pretty creative take on specters and apparitions, why some places seem to be more haunted than others. And then I looked at what else Richard has written, and I saw that he's carved out his own path on several topics that are near and dear to a Coastie's heart, including alleged alien abductions, secret societies, other stuff that we talk about on this program. So we're going to pick his brain and see what's in there. Richard Thomas will join us momentarily. In the second half of the program, you remember Omni Magazine? It was a terrific, glossy publication, science-oriented, very popular back in the 80s. I think it lasted into the 90s, and then it took a dive. And what was really popular, at least for me, when I used to read the magazine, was a column called Antimatter, which was sort of a scientific look at many of the subjects we cover here on this program. Well, Omni went away, as so many magazines did and are doing, but it's coming back, at least in one form or another. And the guy who will now be writing the antimatter column is Matthew Swain. He's a journalist who currently works as a research writer at Penn State University. In addition to covering some weird stuff for Omni and other publications, he writes about music a lot, and has recently sort of combined those two passions, writing about how the paranormal bleeds over into rock and roll. He's got a new book out called Haunted Rock and Roll, Ghostly Tales About Music Legends, who never seem to go away, even after they're deceased. Highly entertaining book, and I am confident we're going to have some fun talking to Matthew, who is also making his Coast to Coast debut. Before we begin, a couple of news stories. Iraq. It's a mess all over again. It's like the gift that keeps on giving, isn't it? This militant Islamic group, ISIS, is posting videos today showing mass graves. CNN aired the video purportedly showing people that were killed by the militants as they attempt to seize control of Iraq. The Iraqi Air Force fought back today. They killed about 200 of the ISIS militants, according to the government there. Some members of Congress here calling for the U.S. military to intervene. Again, a carrier group is sailing toward Iraq. A contingent of U.S. Marines has been sent to bolster defenses at our embassy in Baghdad. What was that old chestnut we heard at the beginning of the last Gulf War? If you break it, you buy it. Radio legend Casey Kasem has died. Kasem, as you know, has been in poor health for quite some time. And as various factions in his family fought for control of his affairs and his estate, Kasem, known for his American Top 40 Countdown, which is played on, gosh, I don't know how many radio stations, was 82 years old. And the San Antonio Spurs are the new NBA champions. They routed the Miami Heat today. I'm sure a lot of dads spent at least part of their Father's Day watching that final game. As you know, webmaster Lex and I usually put together an assortment of oddities and items from these recent news reports and publications. We post them on the Coast to Coast website under Knapp's News. Included in our little potpourri tonight is an in-depth piece about HAARP. You know what HAARP is, the classified research project up there in Alaska that everyone seems to love to hate. HAARP, which has spawned so many conspiracy theories, HAARP is supposedly being shut down. Or is it? I'm not sure anybody is going to believe that. But at least that is the official story. And we've got a piece on that I think you'll want to check out if you're interested in HAARP. We have a couple of stories that will fit with our general discussion tonight. A fun profile piece about haunted ships, ghost ships from history. Another piece there about scientists looking into Ouija boards, how or if they really work. Got a profile. I don't know if you've seen this story. It didn't get a whole lot of play, but we got a profile of a recently departed guy. He had a lifelong interest in the occult, but turns out that he became the oldest man in the world. Whether those two facts are related or not, I can't say, but it's an interesting story, and I think you'll enjoy it. And then there's an article with this provocative title, What Does Hell Sound Like? You'll have to read that one for yourself. Check out the Naps News section on the Coast website when you have some time. We turn now to our first break, and when we return, writer Richard Thomas. I'm George Knapp, and this is Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast. Richard Thomas is a writer of nonfiction books, magazine articles, and newspaper columns. He's written articles on a wide range of subjects for the South Wales Evening Post, for Alien Worlds, UFO Matrix, Mindscape, Paranormal Magazine, and many other publications. As I told you, the article he wrote that got my attention was something called Have You Ever Wondered About How Ghosts Work? And our call screener, Gina, told me that she was on the phone a couple of minutes ago with Richard, and he wanted to emphasize that he's not a scientist. He's just, quote, a bloke with an interest in the paranormal. And Richard, that makes two of us. So welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me on. I've been a fan of this show for years and years and years.
I'm glad to hear it. So you're in Wales this morning.
Wales in the UK, Swansea.
We're going to talk about ghosts in a bit. I wanted to sort of take the long way around to get there, though, because your interest in all things paranormal started when you were pretty young. I guess you're still kind of young, but when you were much younger, you had an experience. You want to start there and tell us what happened?
Well, I suppose how I first became interested was through my father. He had a lot of books about UFOs and ghosts and things like that. But then I started to become more sort of cynical as I became a teenager and just got into sort of more normal subjects that teenagers are into, you know, professional wrestling and stuff like that. But then when I was about 16, I saw a UFO here in Swansea. And it was sort of a cigar-shaped object. It was sort of white, but it was shiny, almost silver. And I was watching it. I was in the car with my father and my brother. We were at a red light, and I watched it for a couple of minutes. And it was sort of, I thought it was a plane at first, but it was the way it was moving. It was sort of going, it would go up, and then it would go down, and then it would go sideways, left to right. And then eventually it sort of just disappeared. Either it sort of moved off so fast that it was almost as if it vanished, basically. And after that, my interest in sort of paranormal subjects sort of went from sort of a casual interest to, it just went supernova. I started reading every book I could find, listening to shows like this, taping documentaries. And this went on for a few years. And then eventually I started writing for a website, binallofamerica.com.
Yes, and, Tim Binall, sure.
And from there I started writing for magazines and things, and eventually I got enough experience at writing. I started writing about more mainstream subjects, started writing for the local paper and things like that.
You have a column called A Big Day Out?
Well, I've stopped writing it now. I sort of ran out of places to visit, but I wrote that for about 3 years. It was every Saturday in the local paper.
And were you able to write about paranormal stuff in that column?
Sometimes you could fit it in. Like if I was visiting a castle or a museum or something like that, where they had sort of a ghost story I could write about, I could sort of work it in.
And tell me this, are your editors, were they sort of wary of anything like that? You could slip it in if it's related to a castle, but you just couldn't do a UFO story or a ghost story on its own, or am I mistaken?
Well, I remember I was on the news desk once, and somebody phoned in about a UFO sighting, and it did get into the paper, but people were sort of, you know, sort of laughing and smiling about it, and you just realize that this isn't something that you sort of take too seriously in front of other people at the paper. Do you understand what I mean? You know,
I do.
Yeah.
It's true for UFOs. It's true for ghosts as well, right? Because it makes people uncomfortable.
Yeah, it makes people uncomfortable. Yeah.
Go ahead.
I have a theory about what that is. I think it's basically because scientists and people like that, they spend years and years and years, you know, doing their degrees and, getting qualifications. And the UFO subject and ghosts, you're basically getting them to admit that they don't have all the answers, that there are things they don't understand. And I think they're very uncomfortable about that.
I think you're absolutely right. Do you have have you developed sort of a unified theory of the paranormal? You said that, you know, it was a UFO incident that sort of got you interested in all things kind of paranormal, and you started reading on a variety of subjects. Do you think there's a link?
I think there is a link, but I don't think there's one explanation for UFOs, ghosts, and et cetera. But I think in a lot of cases, when people see a UFO or they see a ghost, it's the same thing, but not in all the cases. I interviewed the editor, well, he used to be the editor of Paranormal Magazine. He's written a book called Haunted Wales, Richard Holland.
Yes.
And when he was a child, he says that he had a poltergeist in his house, you know, and it was causing trouble and things, and probably getting him in trouble as well, because, you know, obviously the parents would think that, you know, he's doing these things, making these, you know, noises and stuff like that. And I asked him, because there are two theories of what people think poltergeists are. The first theory is that they're the spirits of the dead, and they're, you know, making a nuisance of themselves, basically, to get attention because they need help to move on to, you know, whatever, heaven, whatever. And the other theory is that it's actually human beings, you know, that we have sort of latent psychic powers, and for some reason, children in particular, when they enter puberty, that these powers are somehow triggered and they, you know, cause things to move around and stuff like that. And we're just interpreting it to be a ghost. And I asked him, you know, which one does he think it is? But he didn't think it was either. He had a third idea. And I think his third idea might explain UFOs, fairies, all sorts of things. His third idea was that it was basically some sort of shapeless, formless intelligence, basically, that sort of connects to the human mind in some way and manifests in our world. It's using our imaginations, basically, to take form in this world. And if you're someone who believes in ghosts, it'll manifest as a ghost. If you believe in UFOs, it will manifest as a UFO. In ancient times, maybe, you know, back in Egypt, it would manifest as an Egyptian god. So I think maybe he's onto something there. But I don't think that's in every case. I think some UFOs might be alien spacecraft, and some ghosts might really be the spirits of the dead.
It sort of fits in with Jacques Vallée. I would hope that you've read some of that material where he talks about aliens today, as we call them aliens. We might have called them fairies or gnomes or goblins or something in a previous era, but they're the same thing.
Yeah, I think that's wherever the answer is, it's going to be something like that. I'm thinking along those lines now.
We recently had in this country a little bit of a flap about something called Slender Man, and I don't know if you're following this at all. I think George Norrie covered it on the program here on Coast. But these two kids who stabbed one of their playmates a couple dozen times, they said at the behest of this thing called Slender Man, who sort of they picked up on this legend online or among their friends, and they sort of have given birth to this thing, and other people have as well. It sort of fits with what you're saying, is that you believe in it and you bring this into the world in your own mind.
Yeah. How old were the children?
These were 12 and 13 years old.
Yeah, that's interesting, because Richard Holland seems to think that it might be tied to puberty, that these beings, I call them mind parasites, is the term I came up with to explain, you know, just to give them a name. And he thinks that when you enter puberty, you know, like when you know, it's like diseases. you can catch certain diseases at certain times in your life. Perhaps the immune system isn't as strong, or is changed in, you know, is changed in a way during that time that it allows these things to more easily, you know, tap into the human mind, the human consciousness, or whatever it is they're doing.
Well, that sort of goes along with a lot of that's been written about poltergeists, is that, you know, the investigators will often ask if a haunted house, if there are teenagers living there, because that there's at least one school of thought that at some of these cases, it's generated by the minds of these teenagers related to puberty, the age, the rebelliousness. I don't know what it is, but often that is the case. This weird stuff turns up when you got a couple of teenage kids in the house.
Yeah.
Tell me this. You said that your father had an interest in UFOs. Was his interest beyond UFOs into the other paranormal stuff? And if so, what's the source of that? Has he had experiences as well?
He did tell me about a paranormal experience he had, and I'm actually working on an article right now. This is going to be the next thing I write for Neil Nettle, the website where the ghost article I wrote is on. I'm going to do something on crisis ghosts. Have you ever heard of crisis ghosts?
No.
No. Well, they're pretty common, actually. You probably heard of a relative who's had a similar experience, just not heard the term. Basically, it's when a friend or a relative appears in a dream, or perhaps even while you're awake, you pass them in the city or something, you know, wave and say hello, and they wave back or whatever. But you find out later on that you couldn't have seen them, or it was strange that they were in a dream that time, because they'd actually passed away that time.
Yes, yeah.
You see? And he had an experience like that. He was on holiday with my mother in the 80s, a few years before I was born, in Tenerife, I think he said he had gone. And he'd had a dream about his father's friend, my grandfather, Oppo, I think was the name of this friend, and he said he was all dressed in white, and he basically said to my father in this dream, you know, not to worry, that he was okay. Sort of a strange dream to have. But when he got back from Tenerife, he came back to Wales, you know, it turned out that this friend had died, and he didn't know he was sick. So I think maybe that might have triggered a lot of my dad's interest in these sort of topics. But he wasn't just interested in ghosts. He was interested in pretty much anything strange or unusual. He went for a phase where he was big into lost civilizations, Atlantis, and things like that.
We've talked about it on this program many times, is that as in here in the U.S. and there in Wales, I mean, regular people have these experiences. They see things. They see things in the sky. They see things walking around in their house. They're going through walls. They tell other people about it. They worry about how people will react. And they especially worry how science and journalism will react, because they'll be told they're crazy. Science will tell us that ghosts are not possible, that extraterrestrials can't get here from there, that whatever we're seeing, it isn't what we think it is. And I think there's a disconnect there, and it seems to be growing, the disconnect between science and what regular people see all over the world and have throughout time.
Yeah, I think that's very true. But when you get someone who is sort of an academic or you know, a professional person, when they tell you that they've seen something, and they're embarrassed about it, that's when you know that this, you know, that these things are real and that they've had a genuine experience. I remember when I went to Swansea Museum doing the day out column. No, this is before I started doing the day out column. This was I'd gone to a sort of like a stay of the night at the museum. They'd had a thing there, like a paranormal investigation or whatever. Some things happened, but not very much. Anyway, I talked to the staff there, and they said that they'd seen some things, and I could come back the next day to interview them about what they'd seen. And one woman told me she'd seen a man on the stairs, and a medium had been there and told them that this man on the stairs had committed suicide on a ship in the marina nearby. And then she said that, I won't say his name because I don't know if he would want his name on the air, but he was like a senior person at the museum. He had actually seen something. So I tried to...
I'll tell you what, we're talking with Richard Thomas. That music tells us we're going into a break. Why don't we take a break? We'll come back and pick up your story about this experience at the Swansea Museum. We're talking with Richard Thomas, who's written some pretty interesting stuff, including an article called How Ghosts Work. And we're going to jump back into that discussion right after this on Coast to Coast AM. Richard Thomas, before the break, you were telling us about the story about something that happened at the Swansea Museum. Please continue.
Yeah, well, you know, some of the staff said that one of the senior member of staff had seen something odd. Anyway, they went in the back in the office and they brought him out to come and speak to me. And he looked sort of very embarrassed and he was sort of, you know, asking me questions about, you know, who I was and, you know, why I was there. I sort of explained to him that I was, writing a magazine article. And eventually, when he realized that, you know, I wasn't going to laugh or, you know, I was going to take his story seriously, he started to tell me that he had seen a man, and the term he used was as real as you are now standing in front of me, walk down the corridor. But when the museum should have been closed, there shouldn't have been, you know, anyone there. And he thought it must have been a member of staff or whatever. He, you know, called out to this person, and they just walked through a wall, you know. And, you know, he was, I could tell that he was serious about what he was telling me. This wasn't some, you know, game or silly story he'd made up. You know, I could see it in his eyes that he was, you know, remembering something, and he was being very serious with me. And that is probably the most convincing story of, you know, a ghost that I've ever heard.
You know, it's your country, the UK and the British Isles. I mean, there are so many old buildings and castles, and if there is such a thing as a building having a soul or there are psychic residue, you have so many more than we do here. You think that, let's talk about that. I mean, is it related to the age of a building? Is there a connection between spirits and specters and stuff like that?
Well, there could be. In the case of Swansea Museum, where I heard this story, it is actually the oldest museum in Wales. I think it was built in the 18th century, 17-something, I think. I can remember thinking that's older than the United States. I did American studies at university. So mm-hmm. it's quite an old building. Dylan Thomas, the famous poet, described it as a museum that belongs inside a museum.
That's a good line.
Yeah. So I think there could be something to do with the age of a building, yeah.
But, I mean, you had said you wrote this column where you would go to do something about an old building or a castle. I would imagine that almost every old building has some sort of a ghost story attached to it, or a lot of them do. Or is that, am I exaggerating?
A lot of them do, but it's hard to find people to talk about it. I would say it's easy to get them to talk about it if it's a castle or something like that, because, you know, it's almost expected that every castle has a ghost. You know, I heard a lot of stories about, you know, white ladies. It seemed like every castle has a white lady.
Right.
That people can see.
Let's talk about your article, this piece that caught my eye. You had a couple of interesting theories in there. One is about, it's called the stone tape theory. Now, I've read my share of ghost books, but I had never heard this before. Why don't you explain it?
Well, the stone tape theory, the idea originates from, it wasn't like a paranormal researcher came up with this theory originally. A man called Nigel Neal, who's a famous science fiction scriptwriter. He wrote the script for the film Quatermass and the Pit. I think in America it was released as 5 million years to Earth or something like that.
Oh, that's an old one.
Yeah. Anyway, he wrote this script it went out on Christmas Day, and it was sort of like a TV special called The Stone Tape. And 1972 it went out. And in this special, it's about scientists. They're looking for a new recording medium, you know, something to replace VHS tape. And the building that they're doing their research in is haunted. And one of the scientists sees a ghost, and they start talking about, about what this ghost could be, because it can't be the spirit of a dead person. And they come up with the idea that perhaps it's the building has somehow recorded an event from the past, and it's in the brickwork of the building. And perhaps, you know, they do some experiments, and they find out that vibrations causing noises, banging things about, somehow activates this recording.
And does it matter what kind of stone or what kind of brickwork it is?
I think it did in the TV play, but I'm not sure in real life if it would matter. I remember granite. I think it was in the stone tape is the type of stone that it would record, human emotions or memory or whatever it was that it was recording.
So in essence, it's like a tape recording, but it's not recorded on tape. It's recorded in brick or mortar or stone.
Yeah, it's a psychic recording, basically. And it would, and the reason, you know, some people would be psychic enough to actually see the ghost and hear it, and it would, you know, and it would look like, you know, it would look as real as I am. But someone who's less psychic perhaps would only hear it, or they'd see something they could see through. So it would depend on how psychic the person, you know, was to see if they could decode whatever this recording is.
Well, that would explain why, you know, there could be a mass sighting of a specter or an object or a flying object. One person sees it, one person doesn't. But of course, you know how scientists would react if you were to tell them that theory. They'd think you were crazy.
Well, most scientists would, yeah. But I think maybe if you talk to them in private, perhaps they'd be a bit more open-minded. I mean, when you think about it, the fact that, you know, VHS tape can record information, you know, if you were to go back to the 19th century and, you know, tell scientists that, maybe they would look at you a bit daft.
That's true.
You know, they think that was a silly idea.
You had a quote in your article, included a reference to Professor Brian Josephson of Cambridge, who was a brilliant man. And I was surprised to see, do you remember what the quote was about? Him suggesting that one way he could understand that these events take place?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I remember that. Is that the quote? Is that the guy who thought the only way he could explain the stone tape theory is if inanimate matter somehow had consciousness?
Right.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to remember if Josephson. Like, go ahead.
You know, that sounds like an outlandish idea, but we don't actually know what consciousness is. You know, mainstream science would say that it's the brain is creating consciousness. But the way I think about it and what I think might be happening is the brain isn't creating consciousness at all. It's more like a receiver, and consciousness is out there somewhere, and we're sort of picking it up like an antenna. So maybe the reason human beings have the most consciousness, the most intelligence, is because we have the most complicated antenna of the human brain. But perhaps something like, you know, a stone or, an inanimate object, maybe it can pick up something, not very much, but just a little bit.
You also mentioned in your article about time slips and how that might be confused for poltergeist, ghostly apparitions. Tell me what you mean.
Time slips. These are experiences where people believe that they've been transported back in time. I mean, a famous case happened in 1979, and it was two English families, the Gisbys and the Simpsons. And they were traveling through France and to head to Spain for a holiday. And they stayed the night at this hotel in somewhere in rural France, and everything was very strange there. The people were all, you know, wearing very old fashioned clothes, and there was no glass in the windows, and it all seemed like it was hundreds of years ago. And at the end of it, it only cost them 17 francs, I think, for, you know, to stay there the night and have breakfast and, you know, the whole family were there. And on the way back, they tried to find this place again, and it seemed to have vanished. And and when they got back to the UK, they developed their photographs, and they were all blank as well. So they started to think perhaps they'd traveled back in time to like 100 years ago.
And I've heard similar stories at battlegrounds, people who think they see ghostly specters fighting a battle all over again at famous battlegrounds. Or there's a place in Utah where some people have seen Indians fighting cavalry, and it's almost as if, you know, you might be tempted to think it's some kind of a ghost, but you might actually be getting a glimpse of something that's happened on that property a long time ago. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, the question is, have they physically traveled back through time, or has the human mind consciousness somehow traveled back to an earlier time, perhaps made contact with a mind from the past? Carl Jung, the psychiatrist, he visited Ravenna, Italy, in the 1930s, and there was this tomb of a Roman empress that he visited, and he looked at the mosaics there, and he thought they were very beautiful. They were sort of maritime mosaics. And afterwards, he tried to find postcards of them. He couldn't find them anywhere, so eventually he went back home. A few years later, a friend was visiting Ravenna, and he asked them if they could take some photographs for him. And they did, and they brought the photographs back, but the mosaics there were completely different to the ones he had seen. And after some research, he found out that the ones that he had seen did at one time exist, but they'd been destroyed in a fire 700 years ago. So he started to think perhaps somehow his consciousness had traveled back in time.
You ever go into one of these old buildings that you're writing about and sort of try to invite something in, you know, sort of open up your mind and send out a message and say, hey, if you're here, let's have it. Let's have the, show me the goods.
Well, I don't know about invite something in. I'm a bit superstitious, you know, about, you know, don't play with things that you don't understand, you know. But I have, you know, if there is anything here, you know, show me or whatever. I kind of, you know, I've been on a ghost hunt before, and they were all sort of surprised that I wasn't scared or anything like that. I was just sort of talking to whatever it is that might be there, you know, like a person. So that's the way I think about it.
I don't know if you're, TV shows that air in your country now are the same things that are airing here with these ghost hunts. A lot of them leave a lot to be desired. Would you agree?
Yeah, I would, actually. They're sort of, it's all screaming and running around in the dark, isn't it?
Yeah,
I mean,
with
years
green.
Years ago, the documentaries used to be a lot better. They would talk about, you know, the people's experiences and possible theories to explain them, and now it's just running around in the dark with a, you know, a see in the dark camera, night vision, and I don't really watch them. I turn them off. They don't interest me at all, really.
You had mentioned how you, if you talk to scientists privately, that they might have a different opinion than they might admit to publicly. Have you got guys who have talked to you about the ghost theories who would not want to be quoted? Same thing with famous people. Have you got any famous enthusiasts regarding poltergeists, ghosts, things of that sort that you've interviewed that don't want to be quoted?
Well, I don't know about interviewed, but I have friends that have, you know, got master's degrees in, you know, science and things like that. And if I was to interview them for the paper, there's no way they'd talk about ghosts or the paranormal or anything like that. But if you just talk to them in the pub about these subjects, they're very open-minded, incredibly so. You know, they'll admit that we don't know everything, basically. You know, and we know a lot less than what is to be discovered.
You wrote an article that's a little bit more I don't know, less ethereal, I guess. It's about symbolism in a really famous movie called Blade Runner, which I think anybody who watches or listens to Coast knows about Blade Runner and really likes it. But you found a lot of secret society symbolism in Blade Runner. I hate to hit you cold with this topic, but do you want to get into that a little bit?
Yeah, we can talk about that a little bit.
How'd you get started down that road?
Well, what do you mean? Secret Society symbolism or Blade Runner?
Yeah, in particular, that movie as having Secret Society symbolism. Were you just watching the movie and go, hey, I know what that means?
Well, Alien is actually my favorite film. So, you know, after I've watched that film hundreds of times, I wanted to watch Ridley Scott's other famous science fiction film. And it was about the time that the Final Cut came out. And I watched it, and I'd been, you know, listening to shows like the Alex Jones Show for years, so I was, you know, very familiar with the idea of the Illuminati and, you know, secret symbols and things like that. And I was just blown away by how many symbols are in the film. You know, the film opens up with Harrison Ford's, you know, close-up of his eye. And I thought, well, that's like, you know, the all-seeing eye. And then, you know, in another scene, he goes into the Trell Corporation's HQ, and there's this owl there. I think it's a replicant owl. And, you know, and the headquarters itself is this giant pyramid. And the whole film is about the man and machine sort of becoming the same sort of, you know, the merger of man and machine. And, you know, that's kind of like... the transhumanist idea.
The singularity.
Yeah, the singularity. A lot of people think that this conspiracy, you know, the Illuminati conspiracy is about, you know, the people that rule the world want to become immortal, basically, and they have to get rid of us so that they can, you know, live here forever, sort of thing. And I don't know what it all means, to be honest. I don't know what it all means. I don't know if those symbols are really in there or if it's just something that I've interpreted.
Yeah, I was wondering, what's the point of Ridley Scott or somebody associated with that film of putting that stuff in there as some kind of other agenda?
Well, you know, according to the conspiracy researchers, they believe that the Illuminati believe that they get power from putting their symbols out on display, sort of like, you know, a spell or something like that. So maybe that's the reason. I don't know.
Have you read other Philip K. Dick stuff?
I've read the original book, To Android's Dream of Electric Sheep.
Right.
And, you know, some of his short stories. And I've watched a lot of documentaries about the man. He is a very interesting man. You know, a lot of people wonder, did he go nuts at the end or... You know, did he just wake up and become, you know, really super aware to what was going on in the world?
Well, I don't know if you're familiar with the accounts of this thing called Valis, this vast cosmic intelligence that reached out and talked to Philip K. Dick. But I know other people who are still around and still sane who were also contacted. And that could be a show by itself, I think. Are you familiar with that?
Well, I'm familiar with, you know, this being that would sort of talk to him, and he thought it was God, and then he thought it was an alien, and then he went back to thinking it was God again. But I didn't know that this being had contacted other people. Would you mind talking about that for a little bit? That sounds really interesting.
I got to think if I can out them on this. I think there's one guy in particular that wouldn't mind me talking about it. His name is Dr. Jack Sarfati. He's a friend of ours, a physicist, sort of a maverick physicist and quantum theorist who's he has an interest in coast-to-coast type topics. He's written a couple of interesting books. Destiny's Matrix, I think, is one of them. And he says that when he was, I think, 12 years old, he got a phone call similar to what happened to Philip K. Dick, and phone call was from a metallic computer-sounding voice. I think that Dr. Sarfati thinks that it was generated from a spaceship that was hovering over the Earth, and he was told that he would be a special guy, and they would be keeping an eye on him through his life, and chances are that's what's happened to him. So he's not alone. There are others as well.
What about the idea that this could be, you know, the government or something like that, you know?
Well, if you're asking for my theory, I wouldn't put it past them. You know, I wouldn't put anything past the government. We're going to talk about some other conspiracy theories with Richard in a moment, including the subject of his first book, which was the Bermuda Triangle. And we'll be opening up the phone lines right after this with your questions for my guest here on Coast to Coast AM.